Reignite on RTE Radio 1 with AIB. Whatever stage your business is at, there's always time to imagine sustainable, positive change. AIB, for the life you're after. Reignite on RTE Radio 1 with AIB. From small wins to big ambitions, we support your sustainable business plans. AIB, for the life you're after.
To Reignite, coming up, entrepreneur Padraig O'Cadia on his new book, The Purposeful Decision Maker. The bid to create the world's first Trading for Impact salon and academy out of Ballymun. And career psychologist Sinead Brady answers your career questions. I'm Monia Kerr and this is Reignite. Get your WhatsApp messages into us on 0870 32 32 32. Text us on 51551. Email us on reignite@orshe.ie. And if you're out and about, we're now live on the Orshe Radio app. Now, over the next 5 weeks, our hope here on Reignite is that this can be the space where we can spark joy, inspire you into action and leave you hopefully with some practical takeaways that you can apply to life and work. And one of the things we've talked a lot about over the last five seasons in Reignite is the importance of finding purpose and meaning, impact, knowing the answer to why we do what we do. One person has been thinking about purpose so much, he has now written an entire book about it called The Purposeful Decision Maker, a guide to making great decisions in life and business. Padraig O'Cadia, you're very welcome to Reignite.
Thanks a million, Anya. It's a privilege to be here and to be speaking with you this Saturday morning. Goramahagat.
Thank you. And you're coming to us live from TG Cahir Studios in Cashla, Galway. And I know it's a part of the world you're deeply proud of, Padraig. And people listening this morning will know you as the former owner of Air Éireann, a former independent senator, winner of EY Entrepreneur of the Year. You once considered a presidential run back in 2018, and you're now also a newly published author. And I've been reading the book and really taken about, you know, this parallel story of success and achievements, but this constant underlying of learning the lessons. And in the earliest pages, you start with an ultimatum from your wife where she puts it to you, it's me or the airline. And you haven't this realization that you speak very, very honestly about in those opening pages about jeopardizing what you call safe harbor. Can you take us back to that moment with your beloved wife and this moment of I got to go about thinking about my safe harbor a little bit more deeply?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, Anya. And there's a couple of times in life that somebody says something to you, particularly somebody that you're very, very close to, that you share your safe harbour with, and it's so important to listen. And I mean listen carefully, to reflect and to listen carefully. And at that stage, I remember well, I was over in London. I was approached to see whether I'd buy another airline, and I had met the people involved in the other airline, and I was working day and night, I mean 24/7, and I was pushing myself to the brink without really realising that I was. And my wife said to me over there, she says, hold on, Padraig, you got to make a call. And she's an incredible lady, and she knew she had to put it pretty strongly to me and to say, hold on. You got to reshape, you got to restructure yourself, you got to get back into your safe harbour. And that was a really an important, if I can say, one life-changing moment for me. And I think it's important for all of us to really, really listen and recalibrate and to say, who am I really and where am I at and where am I going and what and why am I doing all this?
And what's important? Because
exactly.
You tell this story of obviously the achievements, the successes, but the health issues, the realization you had this unhealthy relationship with work that sometimes wasn't contributing to your life. Maybe then wasn't even, it meant that you were contributing in the ways you'd like to your company and the team, and that there were times where you just didn't have the energy for it. And you're honest in the book about this life-changing moment where you were having these blackouts, but it culminated then in a heart attack, a near-death
right.
experience. And you'd only had a health check and you'd been, I think, running a marathon only months previously. So was this a moment of just, this was stress, this was life calling a halt and saying, you got to get a grip here.
Exactly. be honest with you, Anya, one of the best things that happened to me, and it's a crazy thing to say, was actually getting the heart attack on Tuesday morning, the 17th of January, 2012. And I celebrate it every year, just like a birthday, that I actually survived it. And I needed that kick in the ass. Sometimes somebody said to me once, Porrick, what's the difference between a kick in the ass and a pat in the back? I said, how do you mean? They said, 6 inches. And that's so true. So that was, people say, a life-changing moment for me. Yeah, I started to get out of some of the businesses. I started to recalibrate and to change my life and actually to start thinking about what is my safe harbour? Who is in my safe harbour? Why are they there? What gives me energy? What's really important to me in life? What's actually not important to me in life? How am I using my time? And it was a total recalibration. And but for people like Professor Kieran Daly, the cardiologist, and Alan Mulholland, who actually found me slumped over in the car in Galway, in Munster Avenue in Galway, I probably wouldn't be here today. And yeah, I thought I was fine. I thought I was healthy. You know,
and you'd entered what you called a danger zone in the book without even realizing it. And you were lucky, as you say, you had all of those interventions, you had the near-death experience, but you had to learn the lesson. You got a stent. You did an unusual request to the doctor about the stent when you got it in.
Oh, my good God, you've certainly read the story. I did. I didn't know what was wrong with me because, as you said, I had a full medical done a number of months before that and I was told basically I was fine. And I was out running marathons, half marathons. I was quite fit. I never took drugs in my life. I hardly ever drink. I never smoked. So I thought, geez, I'm fine. And I asked the cardiologist. He told me I was lucky. He says less than 1% survived what you've survived. In a strange way, my physical fitness actually helped me. And I said to him, he said, we've put a stent in there. And I said, you know, I hope it's a Galway stent you put in there. And he looked at me and just like what you've done, he's laughed and smiled a bit. And he says, what do you mean? He said, well, I was speaking to senior management in Boston Scientific about leadership a couple of months beforehand. I went up to see what they do up there and they make stents. And they told me that 1 in every 4 stents that's implanted in people in the world is made in Galway. And I said, wow, that's brilliant. So you know yourself, a Galway man, you need a Galway stent. And he said, yeah. And then I asked him, would he have the serial number?
He said, so it's the first time he's been asked for it's a serial number of the
exactly,
stent.
Of the stent. He said, why are you asking? I said, well, if you put a part into an airplane, we have to keep the part number for about 12 years. Geez, I could imagine it'd be the same if you put something into a human body. And he said, yeah, absolutely. I said, why do you want it? Well, I said, I want to go up to the people who made it. That was Medtronic. And I want to meet the actual people around the assembly line. And I want to thank them, literally from the bottom of my heart, for what they do, because they save people's lives. And I happen to be one of them. And I am incredibly grateful for that. And I just wanted to express my sincere gratitude and appreciation. And I did. And I found it quite emotional meeting 15 or 16 people in what they call the clean room in Medtronic. Because people like them, it's not just a job. They're saving people's lives. And 99.99% of the people whose lives they saved, they never know them, never meet them.
And you were connecting into their sense of purpose, which is something obviously you have thought a lot about. And like, you're someone who was a teacher turned owner of this hugely successful airline. You became a senator. You're now doing, I know, multiple callings, you know, as an investor, an advisor. Purpose does change over time, doesn't it? Particularly when you've had to recalibrate in the way you had to and kind of reset your life and priorities.
Really? Absolutely it does. Absolutely it does. Like for me, when I was a kid, my probably single biggest purpose in life is playing football and hurling and rugby and stuff like that. And I want to be as good as I could at that. And your purpose actually just change in life. But it's so important to have your secure base or, Anya, as I mentioned earlier, your safe harbour. Like, you need to have some place that you can put down anchor. You can actually help you or secure you when you've got storms and heavy winds and stuff blowing you all over the place. So not to be out in the middle of the ocean, to have your own harbour and say, OK, I can retreat here, I'm fine, I'm going to let the wind and the storms bypass and then I can actually go out again. And that was really, really key and core for me in actually establishing that. And your safe harbour, Anya, the people, and most important thing about your safe harbour, the people that are in it. And sometimes there are people in your safe harbour that, quite frankly, maybe shouldn't be there. They may not be giving you energy, maybe good dragon energy, or there could have been people in there that were fine in your safe harbour, a particular part of your time and life, and then actually are not core to your safe harbour as you move into a different space in life. So it's important to recalibrate that. But for all of us, I'm actually asking everybody that's listening, have a blank sheet of paper, A4 sheet, and draw a circle in it and put in it the initials of the people who are in your safe harbour. And then put right down, what is your purpose? What are you really trying to do? What's your real goal in life and objective? And then you can ask yourself how you get there.
Because when you've done that pen and paper exercise, you've had the realisation over the years that you were doing a lot of things that had no direct benefit to you. And the figures were pretty staggering, that you were, I think, dedicating something like a quarter of your life to the benefit of others. But you were also probably guilty maybe of being a people pleaser. We all have to kind of sit sometimes in that reality, don't we, and see, are we actually getting the mix right? Are we givers, takers, matchers? Are we giving enough or taking too much?
Yeah, 100%, 100%. And you mentioned in givers, takers, matchers, and that book really, really resonated with me. And a penny dropped on me and saying, am I a giver, a taker or a matcher? You know, Anya, the most successful people in the world, I'm asking the audience to ask themselves, would you say they're givers, takers or matchers? Well, actually, the least successful are givers, and actually the most successful are also givers. But the givers that are least successful, they don't look after themselves. And there's a reason, back to aviation, why the cabin crew, the air hostess, would say, put on your own life jacket first and then look after your children, because you cannot look after your children unless you're okay. So I was actually too loose. I'll be honest with you, weak on boundaries, which is really important. That's also in the book, to identify what your boundaries are. I really think that every secondary school child or young adult in the country should be taught about boundaries, should actually think through and say, what are my boundaries? And that actually helps in decision making.
Yeah, because you have this question that you often come back to that I think came up a moment in strategy class in Harvard Business School, which you were lucky to go to. And the question is, what is the world with me versus the world without me? Find the gap and make a difference in that space. And that's where you have to be then ruthless, isn't it, with your safe harbour. Who's in, who's out, who's taking too much, who's, if you're giving, as you say yourself there, sometimes being too loose with the giving.
Yeah, yeah. Years ago, I got a scholarship to go to Harvard, and like my parents, very working class, never went to secondary school, and they met in an Irish dance hall in London because everyone immigrated at that time. But I didn't even tell my parents about the scholarship to Harvard because it covered the fees, but it didn't cover accommodation or flights or anything like that. So years afterwards, after I won Ireland's Entrepreneur of the Year, I became aware of this postgrad course in Harvard. It's basically an executive master's over 3 years, and I did it. And we had a professor of strategy called Cynthia Montgomery. And she asked us all, I was the only Irish person there, 140 people there from all over the world, all business people. And she says, how do you know if you have a good strategy? Give me one sentence. And people up their hand and so on. She says, no. And then she wrote this note on the thing which came up on the screen. She says, what is the world with your business versus the world without your business? That blew me away. And then I took that, and I have that on my whiteboard, a small office at home. Porrick, what is the world with you versus the world? And everything I do on you comes from that. And actually, funnily enough, and I'll just finish this part on this. You mentioned earlier I was a senator, which is an incredible privilege. And There was a wonderful young lady working with me, Cauchna Cowley, as a parliamentary assistant. And she wrote up on permanent ink on the whiteboard in the office, what is the world with you versus the world without you? In other words, in the Seanad, are you making any difference? And the fellow who replaced me, who actually took that office, phoned me up one day and he said, Pádraic, you have a lovely office. I've one flipping problem. I'm trying to rub this thing off the whiteboard. So I had to tell him the story.
So your legacy is intact in the Seanad with this whiteboard through the years and people in and out of offices. In all of that through the years, like, you dedicate an entire chapter to bad decisions, which I think is so important that, you know, entrepreneurs, founders, people out in the world of business and just going through life, it doesn't tend to be, you know, linear. There's going to be setbacks. And, you know, you talk about, you know, with bad decisions, you have to have this, you win or you learn. But you're big also on, okay, learning from the bad decisions, but also just knowing these moments where just trust your gut. But your gut isn't just this instinctual thing. It's built up, isn't it, over years of understanding yourself, the purpose, the safe harbour you keep coming back to, but trusting it often in the hardest of moments.
You're so right, Anya. Trust is something that builds up over time. It's not an automatic over time thing or gut instincts, and trust are really, really connected. And also confidence is really connected. To actually go with your gut, be confident to go with it. And other people saying, I think you should go this direction, that direction, the other direction, and you don't really feel it, as we say in our gut, that's the way to go. And sometimes when I did not follow my gut, I actually made mistakes.
Yeah.
And some pretty fundamental mistakes. And I actually started following other people's purpose rather than my own purpose, because I didn't have clarity about my own purpose.
So it is coming back, yeah, that radical clarity back to the question you posed, the what is the world with me? And it being just stubborn about it, isn't it, very often with that gut and finding a way on. I wonder what role gut plays when you meet with your investment group. I know there's 10 of you who meet every 6 weeks and you do this 2-hour video call. And I imagine you must be discussing a lot at the moment, you know, obviously a lot of geopolitics, wars, obviously tariffs, potential trade wars, looking at interest rates. What's taken up a lot of your thinking and conversations when you go into that group of 10 at the moment, particularly when you look at a week like this with the tariffs imposed on Europe by the US?
Yeah, a couple of things. And very, very interesting group. And it's an international group. They're from all over the world. There's people from Canada there, America, Brazil, India, Spain, Italy, and so on. Anyway, the big concern, uncertainty, is the whole situation on tariffs. And in relation to that, there are a couple of core fundamentals that generally we think are actually going to change the landscape quite significantly. One is countries and communities like the EU are actually saying, oh, hold on a second now. We've been too dependent on America. We got to be able to stand on our own 2 feet. There's 600 plus million people in America. It's twice the population in the EU. It's twice the population of the US. We got to actually start fostering and developing our own businesses, our own economies, rather than looking totally West, we need to focus more on ourselves and being independent and being able to stand on our own 2 feet. That's really, really important. We got to go and promote entrepreneurship. And I'm not just saying that because I'm an entrepreneur, but that's what people are coming really, really back with. In other words, we got to go and do it ourselves. When years ago, when I won Ireland's Entrepreneur of the Year, I got a present of a chess set, and I don't play chess. And they knew that, the people who gave it to me, but they wrote 4 words on the inscription on the chess set. And these were there: finite resources, infinite possibilities. And that positivity and that drive, yes, we've all got finite resources, but now we're saying, where can we go? Where can we be more independent? I'm actually, there's a big issue in my view coming down the track in relation to this. And back in 1947, after the Second World War, we had the Bretton Woods Agreement, which actually put gold as the base currency. Then in 1970, I think Richard Nixon came in with this idea and changed that and put the dollar as the basic world currency. And now people are asking the question, and central banks are asking the questions, and investors such as people I talk to are asked, should we be linked to the dollar? So the international exchange is linked to the dollar at this stage. That's a very risky thing for the international exchange to be linked to. So I actually think, honestly, I think they're making a big mistake from the US point of view. I really, really do. I think they need to re-engage positively. There's about 45 years of engagement to create a free trade agreement between countries. And now, in a short period of time, that's been torn up.
And do you think in all of that, we have to, like you talk in the book about planning for disaster, and sometimes it is a good thing to have a dangerous mindset. Do you think we have to plan for very, very difficult times ahead? Dare we even say recessionary times? Like, as you look at it globally now and some of the trends and going back and looking at the historic patterns, as you say, since 1947?
Yeah, we absolutely do. And actually a really interesting thing, and if people have an opportunity, like go on Google or maybe ChatGPT, where a lot of people are using now, because in Ireland, we actually prepare a risk scenario every year. What are the main risks that are out there and that can affect our country, our community, our society, our people? And they work off that. Now, funnily enough, back in 2019, a pandemic did not really feature on the Irish risk register and that's government agencies coming together and saying, what are the main risks that affect our country? All that is absolutely critically important. So it is. And then what can we do to mitigate the damage that can cause us as a country, you as an individual, yeah, or your business?
And plan and look around corners and have that futuristic mindset. Finally and briefly, Padraig O'Cadia, back in 2018, you had been thinking about looking for a nomination to contest the presidential election. You later went on to say it had been a tough call to decide against running at the time. The polls were looking really, really good for Michael D. Higgins, and so it was. Right now, given all of the conversations around who should be running, your plea there for us to really think about local sustainable jobs, the importance of entrepreneurship, do you think a presidential candidate from the world of business is important? Like, what's needed now in a presidential candidate given Ireland's place in the world?
That's a really good and a really important question. And the next election of president is going to be, I believe, really fundamental for our country in lots of ways. So my sense on it is people will want to be able to connect with their president. And I mean directly connect. And part of that connection is absolutely trust. The president needs to be to represent our people on an international stage in a very positive, strong way, and who we are and what we're about. And I actually believe that the president needs to have broad, deep experience of community, of society, rather than just purely political experience all their lives, because that narrows it down. Because the role of the president, quite frankly, is non-political. It's outside of political parties and that. It's got a very, very different role and a really important agenda. So I think broad experience, I think, is going to be really important.
Okay, well, Padraig O'Cadia, entrepreneur and author of The Purposeful Decision-Maker, thank you for all the insights and wisdom with us here on Reignite today. After the break, we'll have career questions with Sinead Brady, plus how one woman is building the world's first Trading for Impact salon out of Ballymun.